I'm interviewing Dr. Julia Stewart Youngner at 5831 Marlborough Avenue in Squire Hill. My note taker is Gabby Dinman, and this is for the oral history, and this is oral history 2, and this is tape 1, side 1. And since Gabby Dinman is better at describing the room that we're in, I'm going to defer to her at this moment, and she's going to describe where we are, and then I'll take over.
We're in the kitchen of Dr. Youngner. It's a wonderful kitchen in a Pittsburgh house, an old Pittsburgh house on Marlborough Avenue. And what is most striking are these wonderful, wonderful fruit and vegetable prints. I don't really know their history. I do see some Japanese ones. A leek and melon and something else. I'm not sure what it is. Floral prints, they're just very, very attractive. The whole room is very special. It's got a professional stove, so somebody is a professional cook in this house. It also has a pretty extensive library of cookbooks. The Youngners have certainly done a wonderful, wonderful job of combining the old woodwork with the new modern appliances. The curtains are French curtains with little houses on them, and it's a very, very charming atmosphere. Okay.
All right, here we go. Dr. Youngner, one of the first things that we want to start with is with your history of your immediate family. Your mother, your father, your siblings.
My mother and father were divorced when I was 2.5 years old. My mother was Jewish, my father was not. I was raised by my mother and my grandmother. I only became close friends with my father after my mother's death in 1949. My name was originally Donheiser, D-O-N-H-E-I-S-E-R, and my mother was a Lucy Stoner. I don't know whether you know what the Lucy Stone movement was, but it was a feminist movement in the early years of the century. And she never adopted her married name. The Lucy Stoners kept their maiden names. And so sometime in my childhood, my mother legally changed my name to her name because my father had been married, and she had little contact with him, and so she changed my name to Youngner. So that's my early history. I was raised in New York City.
Your mother's name was Lucy Stoner.
No. Lucy Stoner was a movement.
Okay.
It was a Lucy Stoner movement.
Okay.
She was an early feminist.
Okay. So it's very unusual that your
mother. My mother's name was Bertha.
Okay, Bertha Youngner.
And my father's name is Sidney Donheiser.
And did you have any brothers and sisters?
No brothers and sisters. I have some half-brothers that I really don't know.
Okay. Your father had more children?
Yeah, he married.
Okay. How were you raised? Did you have any religious upbringing?
My grandmother was quite religious, and I was brought up, and all my relatives that I associated with were Jewish. I rarely went to synagogue except to take my grandmother there on the High Holy Day. She rarely went to, she went on Yahrzeit and at times like that. But she only went on the High Holidays, and my mother and I would take her there and leave her there and then come and pick her up at the synagogue. But when I was 13, I went to Cheder and was bar mitzvah.
And what was your grandmother's name?
My grandmother's name was Rose.
And your grandfather?
He had died before I was born.
Okay. And where were your grandparents born? Were they all born in the United States?
No, my maternal grandparents were both born in Galicia, Austria-Hungary. And my father's family was about fifth generation, fourth generation, because I had some great-grandfather who had been in the Civil War, so they were here a long time.
Do you have any recollection of the stories?
I didn't have any stories, but I remember early in my childhood visiting my paternal grandparents, and they had a Civil War rifle that I remember playing with, and I was very much taken with that.
So you did have contact with your paternal grandparents?
Up to a certain time, and then I lost contact completely.
Would you like to tell us about your reunion, so to speak, with your father in the late 40s?
Well, when my mother had a very painful and terrible death, and died of cancer, and what struck me was so sad that when she was dying, under the influence of morphine, that she didn't call for anybody but my father. And it was so sad, it made me really weep. When she died, I called him and told him how sick she was and that she was dying. And he came to the funeral. And after that, by this time I had beginnings of a family of my own and had moved to Pittsburgh. And I saw my father at least twice a year. He came and stopped in Pittsburgh on his way to the West Coast, where he did business every year.
What was his business?
He had a factory that made very special moccasins. The Indian reservation up on the Thousand Island someplace. I don't know what tribe it was, Iroquois, I think, but I'm not sure. But it was a very well-known brand of Indian-made moccasins that he sold. And it was very, very successful. He organized the factory in the Indian reservation, and he would go to the West Coast and then come back and stop at various big cities in department stores and various places and show the latest line of things, and then always stop in Pittsburgh on his way to the West Coast and then on his way back. So he would stop twice during this trip. So he got to know my family and my children.
And when did your father die?
He died in 63.
And you were
the same year my first wife died. They both died the same year.
Could you please tell me when you were born?
1920,
year.
That's like your mind.
No, I understand, but I wanted to...
Yeah, 1920. October 24th, 1920.
And do you remember your mother's birthday? Or when she was born?
My mother was born in 1899.
She was relatively young.
Yeah.
Yeah. And your grandparents? Your paternal grandparents, do you know them?
I have no idea.
And your maternal, your mother, grandmother?
My grandmother died sometime in the middle 50s.
And you said that you also were married a first time. Would you like to tell us a little bit about?
Yeah, this was somebody I met at the University of Michigan when I was studying. We got married when I was still a graduate student. I was 23 and she was 18. And we got married. And she was not Jewish either. She was Greek Orthodox from Detroit. And we married in those days, it was very unusual to get married that young. So this was 1943. It was very unusual, and both families were terribly opposed to it, and they made all sorts of attempts to prevent it, but my mother had remarried, and my stepfather had never accepted the marriage, but my mother did, and was very supportive. And my wife's family, after their initial horrification of getting married, and then marrying a non-Greek, which was the worst, maybe even worse than getting married, they eventually accepted, and we had a good relationship.
And how long were you married?
Well, She died in 1963.
Any children?
I have two children.
And how old are they?
My son is 48. So we had children right away, and my daughter is 7 years younger. My daughter is going on 41.
And their names?
My son's name is Stuart, it's T-U-A-R-T, and my daughter is Lisa.
And where are they?
My son is a tenured associate professor at Case Western Reserve. He's in the departments of medicine and psychiatry. And he's married and has three children, lives in Shaker Heights. And my daughter is lives in Chicago, and she is a graphics artist, works with computer graphics, and does commercial advertising and production, stuff with computer art, and also does her, when she has time, does her own thing. She was originally a ceramicist who started to use computer-generated, I can show you how she got into computers, but she started to use instead of most of the ceramics you see in the houses, it's like a it's like a retrospective show of her her ceramic periods, because we have ceramicists don't like to keep anything; they think it's all to be used and thrown away and made into shards. But we've managed to keep everything, and so we have a whole history of her ceramic period, which was very interesting to see the development. So most of the things you see in the house, there are a few pieces that are not hers. But most of the things, almost all you see, including those spice things there, up on the shelf there, mm-hmm. to the right, against that wall,
they're terracotta colored, yeah, spices with, yeah, corks in them.
Which she made specially for us. The big things you'll see in the living room and stuff. So it's sort of a museum of a retrospective of her ceramic period. But then she got to the point where this didn't satisfy her anymore. Just doing, she was never a production potter. She just was an artist. After working and apprenticing in a production pottery to learn a trade, which was this great experience for her, she then became an art, considered it more art. She wasn't interested in production pottery. And so she began to do artistic things, and she did in Indian shields, which are several in homes in Pittsburgh that you might run into some one time or another that people bought. But she then started to want to generate, use tile, work with tile, ceramic tile. And then from ceramic tile, she wanted to make images with ceramic tile. And you know, you ever see the computer images on a screen broken down into little squares, mm-hmm. so that the picture is broken down into squares? Well, she started to generate her tile patterns from using computer generated. She would take an image and make it into a tile, so she could make tiles and then match the colors of the tiles to the. And she did some of that, and then she got interested in just computer art. I mean, then it was just a transition to computer art.
Now, could you please tell me her full name, date of her birth?
Lisa, she was born September 24th, 1951.
And her full name?
Lisa Youngner.
And is she married?
No, she was married, but she divorced.
Okay, and what is her educational background?
She was a high school dropped out of Alderdice. She was in the age when this was a devastating age for education. So she dropped out, and she went back and went to college for a while. And then
what school?
She went to Goddard in Vermont, and went there for a couple of years, and then became so interested in pottery that she became an apprentice to the pottery professor there and worked with him for a while. Dropped out of school and just worked in pottery and worked in his studio. And that was the beginning of her artistic career, and then never finished.
And her son? Your son? His name?
My son is Stuart James Youngner. And he was born on August 5th, 1944. And
is he married?
He's married, has three children. He went to Shadyside Academy and then Phillips Exeter Academy. He's just the opposite of my daughter. And then he went to Swarthmore, and then he went to Case Western Reserve Medical School. He says he's lucky he was born 7 years before she was, because he would have ended up the same way, because he was very susceptible to all the movements around him. And his movement around him was protesting the Vietnam War, and that was his...
So he didn't serve in the war?
He didn't serve.
And how did he not serve?
I think he was going to medical school.
Okay.
And then
so he stayed in Cleveland?
He stayed in Cleveland. All the opportunities he wanted were there. So he just stayed in Cleveland after he took his residency. His internship in pediatrics and his residency in psychiatry. And he's a board-certified psychiatrist, neurologist, but now his primary appointment is in the Department of Medicine, because his interest is in medical ethics, and he's head of the ethics program at Case Western Reserve. So he's very active in the field of medical ethics.
Could you give me a little bit of background of medical ethics? Is it possible, or would you...
Well, I mean, it goes all the way... I mean, medical ethics is so broad now. It's all the way from consent of patients for experimental procedures, informed consent, to use of fetal tissue, to transplantation, and the ethics of donor and donor organ donation and organ retrieval. Do not resuscitate orders, and what's the definition of death? When do you pull the plug what's the definition of life and death? Are there such things as live heart-beating cadavers, which is a term he uses? It's endless, the issues.
What are some of your opinions on these issues? The fetal.
Well, fetal research, I think that this is something that's going to come, that should have come a long time ago, and it's just been a resistance on the part of the Reagan-Bush administration that's prevented it from being used, but the scientific community is much encouraged by some preliminary results that have gotten.
With the Parkinson's?
With Parkinson's, and who knows what other things can be done. And I don't know, there's a downside that people fear that you know, women are going to have babies to abort just to help people and their families and die. You know, whether that's realistic or not, but the scientific side is clear that something should be done to see whether if something works or not.
So do you think that at some point there could be the possibility of having what you would sort of a Supreme Court of Medical Ethics?
I don't think so. I don't think that we'll ever have that, but we might have some general agreements on things. But these are all very, very difficult issues. I'm not expert in these. Most of my opinions on the issues like what constitutes death and when should one the ethics of pulling the plug, so to speak, crude expression. These are issues where I'm very much influenced by my son's point of view.
And that is that.
Well, but there's certain criteria that should be used, and one has to be careful and very explicit about what the criteria are. And as much you just don't do these things lightly, and there has to be very specific controls over this.
And the patient.
Autonomy, and patient rights are very important.
But also, it's up to the patient to make some plans, isn't it?
Well, the living will and that sort of thing is very much it's very much in favor of that.
Okay, could you please tell me then about your three grandchildren and how old they are and their names?
The oldest grandchild is Matthew, and he's 13. And Jonathan is 11, and Suzanne is going to be 9.
And anything about your daughter-in-law? Is she professionally... involved?
She was a psychiatric social worker in University Hospitals, and that's where they met in Cleveland.
And her name?
Her name is Marilyn, and she's not Jewish. She's Dutch Reform.
And do they practice Judaism, or?
No. Their marriage was made with a very solid agreement that she takes care of the religious instruction of the children, and he doesn't participate.
So there will be some instruction.
They do go to Sunday school. Yes, they go to Sunday school every Sunday when they're home, and they get instruction in the church. It's a very interesting thing. We've gone there periodically. They go on. We've given them presents that we go and stay with the kids for a week or 10 days, so that she can get off and go on some exotic trip with my son, and we take them to church every Sunday morning to Sunday school. Come pick them up. And what amazes me is that this is Dutch Reformed Church. It's now not called that in this country. It's called, I can't remember what it's called. But the interesting thing is completely integrated congregation.
Like Unitarian more, or?
No, it's congregated. It's
black and white.
Interesting. It's
not,
it's a completely different integrated. I would say, looking at the kids going into Sunday school and the parishioners coming into the church, they're 30%, I would guess 30% black. So that even that church has responded to something, whether it's where they are located or what, but I was surprised.
Is this in Shaker Heights?
Yeah.
The church is in Shaker Heights.
Well, I don't know if I can't tell if it's still Shaker Heights. Maybe it's Beechwood. I don't know. It's on Green, off Green Road. So it's not far from Shaker Heights.
So there's
it could be Beechwood. I don't know. Those boroughs run into one another.
So the social niveau is sort
Well, Shaker Heights is an integrated community now. I mean, there is an area of Shaker Heights that's more heavily black than the rest of Shaker Heights, but the schools are all integrated, and it's in Shaker Heights community. So it's an interesting community. The schools are quite integrated.
And I'm assuming that you have remarried.
Yes.
And
yes.
May I ask how long that's?
Well, we married in '64.
And your wife's name?
My wife's name is Rina, R-I-N-A, and her maiden name was Balter, B-A-L-T-E-R. And she was born on October 4th, 1933. And she was born in Brooklyn, New York. And then taken back to Guatemala, where her father was in business, living in Guatemala. They had emigrated from Lithuania to Cuba to Guatemala. And her father was in business in Antigua. And so she spent the first five, her mother was a U.S. citizen, and brought her to Brooklyn from Guatemala by sea at that time, in order for her to be an American citizen. So she, mother-in-law had a sister in New York that they stayed with, so that my wife was an American citizen and brought back
by birth,
and brought back to Guatemala, where she spent the first 5 years of her life. And then World War II was coming, and also there was a repressive anti-Semitic regime in Guatemala, and there was all kinds of disorder. So her father sold his business to his brother-in-law, who was also there, and took his family to the United States, and ended up in Beaver Falls, because he had older brothers who were in business in Pittsburgh. The Morris Paper Company, which you may know, was founded by my wife's father's brother, who was about 40 years older than my 50 years older than my wife's father, because their father had two wives and had children until the age of 60 or something like that. So he had children that were like 40 years apart in age.
Jimmy Balter is one of our interviewers.
Yeah, Jimmy Balter is
Rena's
I guess first cousin.
And I'm trying to remember Jimmy's father's name. His first name?
Morris.
Morris, right.
Morris. He was the one who started the Morris Paper Company.
Right. Jimmy's one of our interviewers. Does your wife have any children?
No.
And you're religious?
Our religious?
Are you very observant, or how do you observe?
Not at all.
Not at all.
Not at all. We don't belong to any congregation, and we are non-observant. We don't keep kosher. We don't go to synagogue on Saturdays or on high holidays. We're non-observant Jews. It always reminds me of a story I have to tell you about that. Some years ago, I read an interview in the New York Times with a black actor named Yaphet Kotto. You know this man? He's an actor who's been quite successful.
Is he the bald-headed one?
If you saw Aliens, the movie Aliens, he was the black man on the spaceship with Sigourney Weaver, the good guy, one of the good guys who gets killed. But he's been on Broadway, and if you ever see Aliens 1, he's a very prominent part of that. But he's a well-known actor. He's on the Broadway stage, and I read an interview with him where he was describing, among other things, that he came from that he was Jewish, and that he came his family emigrated to Harlem from Panama, where his family there was Jewish. They're very black, and that in Harlem he was discriminated against because of his Jewishness, and had a tough time growing up because he was bar mitzvah and all that. So the interviewer asked him about his own children. He has two sons, and he said, "What about their religious education?" He said, "Oh, they're okay, and they're going to be bar mitzvah, and they go to shul every Saturday." And they go to shul every Saturday, and they said, "And do you go to shul every Saturday?" He said, "Me? Never." And then I knew he was really Jewish, because until that time, I really questioned whether this black man was putting this on. But when he said that, I realized that he was really Jewish, and I accepted.
So you identify as being a Jew, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Okay. Can you, one thing that interested me is your reference to your in-laws and your present wife, experience with anti-Semitism in Guatemala. Do you know any of the details? That would be
No, I don't know any details. There was some repressive regime that was very antagonistic to foreigners, and military dictatorship, as Guatemala's had most of its history. All I remember is here. I don't remember what happened to my. Nothing ever happened to my father-in-law, but he had an acquaintance, a business associate who was Chinese, and this man was put in jail for having people in his house to play cards or something like that, or saying something. And he told me stories about going to visit and bringing food in jail. So this man was jailed for nothing.
So it was more of a generic kind of anti-foreigners.
It was anti-foreigners, but anti-Semitism was very strong.
It was. I'd be very interested if you don't mind asking your wife some questions, if she has memory. I think it'd be very interesting to get the regime.
Yeah, I don't know whether she would know the name of it.
Only if you're comfortable doing it.
Yeah, well,
if I
don't know how much she remembers.
Okay.
Too, how much you were told. It's interesting about these things when after we were married, and when we would visit with either they would come here, my father-in-law and his wife would come here, or we would go to Beaver Falls to visit them, I was very curious about all these things, and I would ask them questions about how they emigrated and what it was like in the old country and what it was like in Guatemala. And Rena was fascinated to sit and listen, because these were things never talked about when she was being brought up. So I was asking questions and getting information out of them, which she didn't even ever have heard these stories before. So she was fascinated. So I don't know how much she knows.
Okay.
So she always encouraged me to get more out of them, because I could get them talking and they would remember things. And it was interesting that a lot of these families just never talked to their children about these terrible things that happened to them. They just tried to obliterate it from their history. And I don't know whether it was denial on their part, which I doubt, but it was sparing their children the harms that they did. So that, fascinating.
It's not uncommon. I think that's probably one of the things that interests people in oral history, why they've become so very, very popular.
Yeah.
Certainly.
You said they came from Lithuania?
Yes.
Do you have any idea what time? What year? About 1890s?
Oh, no. They were older than that. They were younger than that. I would guess that they first they went to Cuba. And that's how I don't know whether they were married in Cuba or married in Guatemala. I think they were married in Cuba. But sometime after my mother-in-law went to Cuba, she somehow got to the United States on some kind of quota and became a U.S. citizen.